On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Brad Blanton is a Virginia-based ex-hippie, career psychotherapist, and occasional politician who says enough is enough. It's time to get honest, radically honest, all the time, with everyone. A.J. Jacobs is a writer for Esquire magazine who tracked Blanton down and took up the challenge. His in-laws were unhappy in a hurry, and that was just the start. This hour On Point, we're talking about radical honesty in our homes and halls of power, and whether it would save civilization or destroy it. Later in this hour, we'll get some perspective from philosopher Harry Frankfurt, best-selling author of On Truth and On BS. But first, joining me from Ängsbacka, Sweden, is Brad Blanton. He's called the guru of the radical honesty movement. He gives high-powered workshops around the world on how to be radically honest. He's been a psychotherapist for 25 years, ran twice unsuccessfully for Congress from his home in Virginia. He's author of the book Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth. Brad Blanton, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you. Also with us, A.J. Jacobs, who writes about Blanton in the current issue of Esquire magazine. He's also the author of The Know-It-All, One Man's Humble Quest to Become the Smartest Person in the World. He read Encyclopedia Britannica front to back. And of the forthcoming book, The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Humble Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. He joins us from New York. A.J. Jacobs, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Tom.
We enjoyed the encounter between you guys quite a lot, and we'll hear about it. But Brad Blanton, lay it out for us first. I mean, I took a slight stab at it there, but what is it exactly you're proposing, sir?
Well, radical honesty is about getting to a deeper intelligence, that being able to lose your mind and come to your senses and be informed by what you know from the being that you are, rather than from just the things that are in your mind. It has to do with telling the truth about what you think, about what you feel, and about what you've done, so that, those secrets don't keep you trapped in the jail of your mind. They give you some personal freedom and some opportunity for intimacy with other human beings.
That is, to tell the truth about everything, small and large. A.J. Jacobs, what was it like to come into the zone of Brad Blanton's radical honesty approach?
Well, yeah, I tried radical honesty for about a month, and at times it was incredibly exhilarating and liberating, you know, to be able to tell my father-in-law, I'm bored with your story. I don't really want to hear the rest of it. That was fun. You know, I can't deny it. At other times it was just, you know, it was just horrible, and because it was constant confrontation. You know, you're always saying, yes, sure, I'll come over to your office, but I resent you for asking me. So everything that we usually gloss over and just, you know, play nice, it was you had to tell the truth.
So trying to live it out in your own life proved challenging, and we'll hear more about that. What about just encountering Brad Blanton and his approach? I mean, we've read it here, but you sit down with a guy who's saying toss out the filter between brain and mouth in general, and go. What was it like just to meet somebody who tries to live that even in your face?
Well, I think it was the best interview I've ever had as a journalist in 15 years of journalism, because I could say whatever was on my mind, and I could ask him whatever was. I could ask him the most intensely private and inappropriate questions about his sex life, and he had to answer. So, you know, there was no need for kid gloves. And he, you know, he's a great character. He's like, you know, written by a screenwriter. He's hilarious and outrageous. And so it was great. I was very nervous that he would, you know, start commenting on the mole on the side of my nose or my bad breath, but I guess I was sitting far enough away that he didn't notice.
Because Lord knows he'd be perfectly prepared to do that. Brad Blanton, I mean, is there anything, there's a lot in this article that we can scarcely say on the air. You were prepared to go anywhere AJ wanted to go and maybe a little more, but is there anything that you won't say to somebody in any circumstance?
Well, I don't really advocate that you tell the truth all the time. I think it's very important to tell the truth in all personal relationships. I liked AJ, and he's a character himself, so it takes one to know one.
Yeah.
And I don't recommend that you tell the truth all the time. If you have Anne Frank in the attic and a Nazi knocks on the door and says, "Are there any Jews in this house?" lie. And I've lied to the FBI a number of times. I have a lot of people in therapy with me that had high security clearances, and they have to sign a thing saying the FBI can interview me and I can tell them anything that went on in therapy. They always ask me, "Has this person, to your knowledge, has this person ever used any illegal drugs?" And I would always say no, knowing full well that they had. And that one time I said to the FBI guy, "Have you ever smoked any marijuana?" He said, "No." I said, "Okay, we're even now. Come on with your next question."
So you say, "I lie to the IRS. I always take more deductions than are justified. I lie in golf and in poker." So those are fair game for the lying realm. But when it's personal, when it's within realms of power?
With your boss and with your coworkers and with your family and with your mate and with everyone that you know personally, it's critical to your own health and well-being, your ability to be alive in your life and aware of what's going on. It's critical that you tell the truth so that you don't have to be dancing around in your mind about secrecy. I mean,
What kind of encounter would you bring this radical honesty to that might be surprising to people dealing with, you know, ordinary daily politesse?
Well, I just try to shoot straight with people. Whenever I come across people, if I see something I don't like, I say that I don't like. If I see something I like, I say that I like it. I don't worry too much about what is appropriate or not appropriate. And if it seems to me that people are shocked, I say, "Well, it looks to me like you're shocked." I just say whatever I guess about what's going on in front of me.
AJ, describe for us what that sounds like, feels like. What did you hear from Brad Blanton that you might not have heard in an ordinary interview?
Well, it was I heard these details of his sex life, which you don't get when you're interviewing your average person. But
500 women and half a dozen men, and on and on and on. Okay,
that's right. Yeah, and he has absolutely no problem talking about that. There was no embarrassment or anything, which is great. And it was interesting because when I was interviewing him, he was very open and very encouraging. But at one point in our relationship, we went through a tough period because he felt I wasn't committing enough to radical honesty. And he said that I was, I didn't have the cojones to do this. And
you can't handle the truth, AJ Jacobs.
I could not handle the truth, which is true. Right. I'm a wuss. So, I don't want to have people tell me that my article was bad. I'm happy to have the white lies. So,
what do you think people thought of your article all in all as it came out? Did you get mostly praise or any complaints or what happened?
I did get mostly positive, which is nice. I attacked my own article in the article, which I think deflected some of the criticism because I said that I didn't go far enough. I didn't make anyone cry. or get beat up.
Which you could easily do. We're going to go to what Brad's trying to really get at the root here, but I wish you'd give us a few more examples, AJ, of how you tried this out in your personal life. You described the interaction with your in-laws. What about friends? What about your wife? Give us some of those moments where you tried to exercise radical honesty. How'd it work?
Sure. Well, for instance, I was having dinner with a friend, my best friend, and I told him that I had forgotten his girlfriend's name, his girlfriend of like 4 years.
Not good.
Which is totally inappropriate. But it was interesting because in that case, he could handle the truth. I think I underestimate the amount that people can handle the truth. So he was okay. It didn't end our friendship.
I think
that's
really critical. I think that frequently occurs. I think that we condescend to other people and think they can't handle things or that they couldn't stand it or that they would react in some way that our minds predict in a paranoid fashion. And out of that, we end up having a lot of our relationships be phony to that degree, and they don't have to be. Authenticity in relationships is very nourishing, just like you found when you did tell him that you'd forgotten her name, and it's very, and you all had a deeper relationship whenever you had the argument about that you resented him and he resented you for you all not inviting each other to your wedding.
That's true.
Mr. Blanton, you write about the adrenaline rush that comes from breaking taboos, and A.J. quotes you saying, you learn to like the excitement of mild, ongoing risk-taking, putting it right in people's faces. On the other hand, A.J., I mean, you were with a 5-year-old girl. She had a pet bug, a beetle, cupped in her hands and whispered to you that it was napping. And in the Blanton Philosophy School, you said, it's not napping, it's dead. Did that make you feel good?
I did make one person cry. I did make her cry, and I felt terrible about it.
That was the wrong interpretation. I don't advocate that you do that with little kids. I think you pretend with little kids until they get to where they have abstract cognitive ability. I have a book called Radical Parenting, and the book says that until kids are 11 or 12 years old, you go along with everything, and you don't be radically honest with regard to... but, of course, A.J. didn't have a chance to read that book. I've got 6 books. But what I've said is that with children, you know, that children, it's wonderful and the most fun thing in the world to play pretend games with children. The problem is that about adolescence, we all start pretending that we're not pretending when we are. And that's what lying is.
Let's go to Dave in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have to say it's a great topic, and I agree that being what I consider brutally honest has been very successful, except for the fact that it is necessary to have a little finesse.
Have you, are you married, Dave?
Excuse me?
Are you married?
Yes, I am.
How many times?
Oh, just one.
So it's surviving your brutal honesty.
Yes, 22 years later, and it absolutely has made a difference.
What about friendships or colleagues at work? I mean, do you have them or lose them with your brutal honesty?
It goes both ways, and usually I find those that who are accepting to it are the better friends.
Right. So let it be like the scythe that sorts them out. Dave, thanks for that. Let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Brenda. Brenda, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
This topic was to be right up my alley. I think I'm one of those people who automatically is very honest to the point where people tell me I need to think before I speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you can't control it, and I work for a large, you know, retail corporation, they prefer that you tote the party line. They don't like you to be too honest because then you're perceived as negative. So, you know, you can get but so far. So it's a blessing because I feel like I don't hold anything back, but then it's a curse because you're held back because of it at times.
Right.
Yeah, that's a common dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
You have to consider that a lot of retail corporations are committing the crime of maintaining a war-based economy and hurting a lot of people in the world, and that their secrecy and dishonesty, that corporate rule of America has brought about, is basically the most murderous and malicious thing that this country's ever been involved in.
But what about Brenda's situation?
Between personal honesty
and
doing the party line in a corporation, always do personal honesty. If you don't, pink slips on the wall are worth more than degrees, as far as I'm concerned.
But what about the actual facts of Brenda's life, Brad? You're talking very sort of high politics there, but she's saying this has cost me in my career and in my life. I heard a certain ambivalence in her own mind. She's sort of naturally honest, but
it's
not so sure.
Happy about it.
Well, Brenda, is it worked on balance for you, or are you sorry for letting it all hang out?
I'm not sorry because I don't want to change the person who I am, but
right.
Most people, you know, when they meet me, they don't know how to take me in the beginning.
Yeah.
They're afraid of me sometimes.
Good for
you.
You change yourself for what a corporation wants. Good for you.
I tried. I work for a corporation,
yeah.
So that was a complication in my month of radical honesty, especially in the sexual sphere, you know, men do think about sex a lot. And if you're being radically honest, you have to talk about it. So I went out to lunch with a colleague who I'd only met once before.
This is an editor from Rachel Ray's magazine. You're sitting together at lunch, and pretty soon well, what are you telling her?
I'm telling her I tried to look down her shirt, which was true. And, you know, it was a little awkward.
That's a real icebreaker. And that if you were single, you know, you'd try to sleep with her, you told her. And that you remember what she wore the first time you met. Did she finish the lunch? Did she lean in or back away, AJ?
Yeah, well, when I told her about the shirt, she definitely leaned back in her chair. So that was the end of that. And there was another instance where we have a babysitter, and she, I told her that I had a crush on her and that I would ask her out if my wife ever left me.
Well, great.
And that was extremely awkward. So she didn't quit, but she's certainly avoiding me around the house.
Doesn't hang out with you in the laundry room.
Well, don't let us keep the conversation going. You can get over things like that. What's wrong with that? That seems to me to be honest. She could be honest. You could be honest. It's great. You might develop a more authentic friendship with her and provide an example for her about how to have an authentic friendship. And it doesn't mean that when you tell the truth about what you want to do that you're compelled to do it, whereas if you suppress it and deny it, you'd be more likely to compulsively try to act out on the behavior. Mm.
But Brad Blanton, I understand from AJ's article, you're on your, I'm not sure, fourth or fifth marriage now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that part and parcel of a life of radical honesty? Do intimate relationships have to die in front of it?
You'd have to take one relationship at a time, but one of my marriages was 23 years long. One was 10, one was 15. It's like, it's all a matter of... And there were successful marriages. We still know each other and are friends and love each other. So, like, I don't feel like I have a string of failed marriages. I have a string of successful marriages, and I'm pretty much go along with Margaret Mead that I think marriage ought to be a 5-year contract that has to be renewed.
Now,
and that if you renew it each time, then it's a positive choice on the part of each person.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm proud of my relationships with a lot of people. They're honest and they're. And the kids are extremely examples of extreme success. They're all contributors to society. They're therapists and musicians and wonderful people. And so I'm not the least bit apologetic or ashamed about the number of marriages or relationships I've had. They've been very successful, and I've had a wonderful life. And so have my kids, and so have my exes, and so. That's the way it goes.
Well, let me just ask you, on the sixth or seventh or eighth day of your radical honesty seminar, everybody gets naked. You're now married to a Swedish flight attendant who was at one of those. It sounds kind of opportunistic. How do you deal with the sexual component of radical honesty if men are thinking about it, you know, every 30 seconds or 3 minutes? Doesn't that kind of overwhelm everything else?
One of the reasons men are thinking of it every 30 seconds or 3 minutes is because of the taboos against admitting that you are. And when you let up on the taboos, you're not that bothered about it that frequently. It's a casually accepted. It's the taboos against things. See, when you experience an experience, it comes and goes. But when you resist experiencing it, it persists. And it's the resistance to being honest about what you're experiencing that causes it to persist and even to build up. If you are honest about what you think and what you feel and what you've done, then you're not compelled to have it be exaggerated in your own mind and have yourself have to compulsively deal with it.
Oh, boy.
It's the freedom from the jail of your own mind, from your own internalized taboos, from culture's brainwashing.
AJ writes about the exhilaration that comes with that, but also about the trials that come with it. Let's go to a couple more callers. Peter in Newton, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, thank you.
Yeah.
There is almost a kind of rule, like the 5-second rule, where, you know, if food lands on the floor, you have 5 seconds. If somebody is going to go out and they're going to address a crowd of, say, 500, and they ask you how they look, if it's 5 minutes before they go out and you see a stain on their shirt, you say that you look fine because there's nothing this person can do. There's no time to change his shirt. If he were to have asked you an hour before, then you might say that there's a stain on your shirt.
But you could tell them, and then they could be aware of it and make a joke about it. You're worried that it would upset them so much that they'd blow their speech.
I guess it really depends on that person. If that person is pretty tense and going through their notes and talking with themselves and so forth,
right.
And then right before you say, oh, bye, the way.
Right. Your fly's down and you can't pull it up.
No, but, you know, there's those kinds of things. And then the only other thing that I was going to bring up is the people who tell you that so-and-so said this about you.
Yeah.
And it is an interpretation of what that person said.
And it's something hurtful.
it's sort of white lie, black lie. I'm not quite sure, but there's a goal in telling you that Jane said this about you, and here's what she said, and it's skewed. Anyways,
And maybe a little nefarious, maybe in its intent. Let's go to Chris in Baltimore. Chris, you're on the air.
Just a second. I want to say two things about
yes,
that.
Sir.
First is that it's condescending to not let people make their own choices, whether they're nervous or not. To assume that your judgment about whether the person can handle it or not is condescending. And secondly, I think it's better if you give the person the opportunity to choose themselves how they're going to handle the situation in any circumstance. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, we hear it. Let's go to Chris in Baltimore. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My observation is, I think it's pretty simple, that honesty and truth are not always the same animal at all. Honesty is most often based on, you know, circumstantial sensory input and observation, and it is not necessarily true. Truth is layered and often very hidden and not apparent, and that's all, you know, that's a distinguishment I make.
But do you think that dishonesty can serve truth? If they're different, can dishonesty serve truth, Chris?
I don't think dishonesty serves any truth at all, serves any long, deep truth. It may, on a superficial level, serve some purpose, but not anything that's lasting or purposeful in any way.
May feel kind for a moment. A.J. Jacobs, Brad Blanton, please stand by for a second. I want to bring in another voice, and one that's been pretty big in this conversation recently. We're joined from Princeton, New Jersey right now by Harry Frankfurt, retired professor of philosophy at Princeton University, author of On Truth and the big surprise bestseller on BS that came out a couple of years ago. We've had the pleasure of speaking with him a couple of times. Harry Frankfurt, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So here's Brad Blanton. He's making a life and a kind of career out of encouraging radical honesty, honesty at all moments, all times, essentially, without much of any exception. And this is the path to self-realization and deeper relationships. What do you say, professor of BS specialization?
Well, let me say this. I do think it's important for people to know what they feel and what they think, to know the truth about themselves and not to hide it from themselves. Mm-hmm. I do think that something like radical honesty is important in intimate and authentic relationships, but I don't think it's important for us to have intimate relationships with everybody or authentic relationships or to be authentic in all situations. I think we have to exercise judgment. Sometimes it is a good idea to be truthful, honest, and open. Sometimes it's not. And what bothers me about the whole idea of radical honesty is it seems to recommend that we stop using any judgment, that we simply, as Mr. Blanton said, eliminate the filter between our minds and our mouths. But why should we eliminate it?
Actually, I didn't say that, Harry.
AJ's interpretation.
The interpretation was that, but I pretty much agree with what you say. I said a while ago, if you have Anne Frank in the attic and a Nazi knocks on the door, lie.
Yeah.
And I think probably you do have to do, but people make the mistake, I think, of often choosing a more superficial and less powerful relationship with other people out of fear of telling the truth. And so I advocate go ahead and telling the truth and let the chips fall where they may. And I actually have a whole book of testimony called The Truth Teller, Stories of Success by Radically Honest People, which is a 30 or 40 stories of people who practice radical honesty in their lives. And these stories are great stories of success in business and personal relationships and out there in the world where people took more of a risk than they usually do with regard to saying what they actually thought or felt or did, worked out things in their source family and with their mates that were powerful, powerful examples of how we bypass opportunity in the world because we automatically assume that we don't want relationships with people that would in fact nourish us and nourish them and contribute to the world.
Harry Frankfurt, where do you see a potential downside in the practices we're hearing it described here? I mean, I try to lean as hard as I can toward honesty in interactions, but I'm sure every once in a while I soften an opinion or an attitude that might land like a blow.
Well, sure. A civilized society depends upon restraint and repression, which is sometimes painful and sometimes even harmful. But nonetheless, our ability to get along comfortably and peacefully and productively with other people requires that we exercise judgment and that we don't simply indulge ourselves and spew out everything that passes through our heads. I don't really know exactly where Mr. Blanton stands on this. It sounds like he wants to make more of a concession to the exercise of judgment than I had originally expected, in which case we're not very far apart.
Well, if I may, let me ask A.J. Jacobs to referee that. A.J., you've spent a fair amount of time talking and paying attention to Brad Blanton. Do you see him exercising a lot of discretion in his application of radical honesty or not?
Well, there are a couple points. One is I asked Brad about do you have to say everything that's on your mind? You know, if you meet a friend and they look terrible, do you have to say you look terrible? And he said that withholding is a form of lying. So, and he said it's one of the most pernicious forms. So that's what he calls when you keep something inside that you're thinking. Unless, of course, it's the Anne Frank scenario or other things like that. So I think it's an interesting point of view to consider keeping things in to be lying.
And when you let it all out, is that more pain or more positive, AJ, in your observation?
Well, it all depends. I mean, sometimes it was incredibly exhilarating and liberating, and other times it was just, you know, horrible. And, you know, you insult people and you open yourself up to them insulting you.
Brad Blanton, I'm looking here at a quote from Dave Van Ronk, a folk singer back in the Greenwich Village folk days. He said, "Honesty is the cruelest game of all, because not only can you hurt someone and hurt them to the bone, you can feel self-righteous about it at the same time." What do you say to Mr. Van Ronk?
Well, I think that I recommend that you hurt people's feelings, but that you stay with them until they get over having their feelings hurt. I really like to... I think that being civilized is highly overrated, that civilization itself is a kind of common insanity, and it's a dissociative function that it serves for human beings, and we have to transcend civilization and stop being so civilized. It's civilization that brings about the wars that are destroying and the destruction of the earth that Al Gore's movie I just saw talks about.
We're talking this hour about a call for honesty, for saying radical honesty, that is, for saying just what you think all the time, asking whether that's a great idea or a recipe for disaster. What do you think? Would radical honesty in the State House, the White House, all halls of power change the world? Would it save the world or get it blown up? And with exposure on the internet and video and information transparency growing all the time, are we all getting a little more radically honest these days, whether we like it or not? Honestly, Bob is calling from Hartford, Connecticut. Bob, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
To answer your call, I think it would get us all blown up. You know, I'm listening to this conversation, and I'm reminded of my three-year-old, you know, who's always radically honest because he hasn't yet developed the frontal lobe to his brain fully, and so he can't really exercise judgment, and he's full of impulses with very little impulse control, and, you know, we think it's frequently cute. But when he becomes 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 and he's still equally radically honest, it's no longer quite so cute. You know, I think that the folks who are radically honest in the way that your guest is describing tend to be people who, either by virtue of their age or brain damage or dementia, are unable to exercise the very things that make us, you know, fully functioning social being.
Bob, stand by. Brad Blanton, what do you say to Bob here? He's pretty critical.
I think he should have his three-year-old be teaching him instead of teaching his three-year-old. And I like three-year-olds, and I think that we should model our lives after them. I like them because they're not civilized yet, and I think the worst damage we do to them is civilizing them. I think probably the parenting and the educational system that teaches them just exactly what he's talking about teaches them to be civilized and to lie, and then to lie about lying, to pretend that they're not pretending when they are, is exactly what they are curative of. I have a book called Radical Parenting, which says we should treat these people as our gurus. Your children can teach you more than you have to teach them. They can remind you what it's like to live in freedom and honesty and to not be civilized in the sick, way that our society teaches to be civilized. I have two homeschooled children. I kept them out of school. They're geniuses and wonderful and successful people because I kept them out of school. And I kept them out of school because I didn't want them to go through the obedience training and the ignorance that our educational system basically enforces.
Hold that thought, if you would. Philosopher Harry Frankfurt, what do you make about Brad Blanton's critique of civilization itself? It's disassociative. It's common insanity. Better off without it.
I'm reminded of what Thomas Hobbes said about the state of nature before civilization is developed, that the life of man is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. If we go around indulging ourselves for the thrill of it, out of a kind of a adolescent rebelliousness because we see that there are things wrong with our civilization and we think we'd be better if we all acted like three-year-olds, that sounds to me so preposterous it's hardly be worth taking seriously. It's the attitude of a kind of a pre-adolescent nincompoop rather than a serious thinker.
Do you see a cost to authenticity that's important or not in the civilizing process?
Well, I think authenticity is very important, but as I said earlier, you have to call your shots. You don't have to go around being intimate with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to have intimate relationships, and in intimate relationships, honesty, even radical honesty, may be very desirable, but intimacy is not something that grows on trees. It's not something that we go around picking up wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
We choose the people we want to be intimate with, and we don't encourage intimacy with some others, and that seems to me to make a great deal of sense.
Let me go to Brenda in Jackson, South Carolina. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is so intriguing, but I want to make the point that whether you can get away with brutal honesty depends on who you are. Some people have an innate style that allows them to do this.
Mm-hmm.
My brother's like that, and he makes a lot more friends than enemies. But the second thing it depends on is the nature of the relationship. It's a lot harder to get away with this in your family than it is with friends and coworkers. And interestingly, my brother gets along a lot better with friends and coworkers than he does with his family.
Because he's just insufferable at the family reunion.
Well, by family, I mean his wife and kids.
Oh, yeah.
His sisters accept it because we've dealt with this all our lives, and also we don't feel intimidated because we don't have to live in the same house with it day after day.
And he's just brother boy. You can blow him off if you feel like it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are great points, Brenda.
Yeah.
I want to put it to AJ, who's lived with this or tried to. AJ, what about at the family level?
Well, I also loved her first point, that it has a lot to do with the style. Because Brad Blanton, he's a very jolly person, and he says it almost with a smile. And he can get away with it.
You say he's a mixture of Lyndon Johnson, Ken Kesey, and the non-annoying parts of Dr. Phil.
Exactly. I think that sums him up.
Yeah.
I think that he doesn't consider it brutal honesty.
Mm-hmm.
He considers it compassionate honesty. Even when you're saying something that's very hurtful, he believes that it's for the greater good. Like you tell your best friend that their screenplay is terrible, it's because you care. So where other people might do it sadistically, I think Brad is trying to do compassionate honesty.
But CJ points out that this, while Harry Frankfurt's saying maybe this works with intimates, but we can't be intimate with everyone, CJ says with some of your nearest intimates, it may be most problematic at home, let's say with your wife or kids. What was your experience with your wife, AJ?
Oh, yeah. She yelled at me more during that month than I think in the rest of our marriage. So
during your month of radical honesty.
Exactly.
If you kept it up, would you still be married?
It's a very good question.
Did anything else happen more?
With my wife?
Yeah. Anything happen besides her yelling more?
Did you break through to, a nirvana of clarity and new insight about one another?
Right. Well, I think the insight was that we like to lie to each other. I think that, we would get in arguments, or she would be telling a story and I would walk out and say, I'm not really interested in this. you know, for some relationships, perhaps that's the best approach. But I have to say that in my marriage, I feel that a certain amount of lying is helpful.
The rolling pin could be walking out right behind you. Let's go to Denver, Colorado, and Joe. Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you guys, and you're having a wonderful show today. But, you know, you had asked if people are getting more honest out there, and I'm a young man, but since high school, I've been reading Mark Twain, and he says, if you're always honest all the time, you never have to remember anything, right?
Right. You don't have to remember the lies.
Right, you don't have to remember the lies. And in my, you know, experience trying to be honest with people, you know, it's the 90% or maybe more, 95% of the people out there are just BSers. They're not really wanting to have authentic relationships with you.
So does it make you lonely when you try to practice more honesty then, if that makes you the odd man out?
It's a challenge, but I wouldn't say I'm more lonely. It's just something that, you know, you accept and you value those relationships that you have with honest relationships all that much more, you know?
Yep, we hear it. Joe, thanks.
Yeah, if all your relationships are inauthentic, you're lonely anyway.
Yeah.
Basically, you're not going to get more lonely by being honest. You're going to get more triggers of people who are willing to be honest with you and are more nourishing, because you're already isolated if you're just engaged in nothing but superficial relationships.
Harry Frankfurt, how do you see this intersecting with your kind of rallying cry against BS, we'll have to say, on the air? I mean, you've said this is inflicting our society, infecting and inflicting, I guess, and we need to break free of such a high level of BS. At one level, you see a kind of maybe nincompoop impulse here, but is there another dimension in which this is a impulse that's on your team, on your side?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all in favor of a great deal more honesty, especially in public life, where we have so much and so much lying, so much lying that it's impossible for us to conduct our affairs in a sensible way. What comes to me from practically all of the conversations that we've had today from various callers and from the speakers is that you have to exercise a certain amount of judgment, that perhaps a great deal more honesty than we customarily have would be a good thing, but still it's not always a good thing, and sometimes you have to exercise some restraint and be cautious and prudent and don't indulge yourself for the sake of the thrill of the exhilaration of being honest when that may do more harm than good.
But does judgment sometimes get us sort of harnessed up to dishonesty? I mean, can an excess of judgment or discretion cut people off from saying the obvious, from calling the lies, Harry?
Sure. Of course it can. Judgment
can. You seem to have a lot of faith in judgment, I think he's saying, and I believe that too. I think you have too much faith in judgment.
I have more faith in judgment than I have in three-year-olds.
Yeah, I don't. I have more faith in three-year-olds than I do in judgment.
Well, there we differ.
Yeah, that's where we differ. We do differ.
Let's go to CJ in Windham, New Hampshire. CJ, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to share a quick story with you. It's going about 20, 25 years ago for a large Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. I was in the sales division with them, and they had some radical new sales techniques that they decided to implement. And
were they radically honest, CJ?
They were radically dishonest, and it really didn't sit well with me. And I was one of their top salespeople, and I started developing ulcers, palpitations, couldn't sleep, just having just a rotten, miserable existence. And I finally decided that this really wasn't worth it. I focused on this whole new sales techniques, et cetera, and decided that I was going to do my own thing, my own way.
So what happened?
Be completely honest with the customers, and ultimately it was suicidal for my career, but it was a conscious decision I made. You know, they'd call upon me to sort of role play or give examples, and I decided I wasn't going to do it their way, and I did a quite honest and refreshing way.
Did you lose your job?
I did, ultimately.
And on balance, are you happy that you went down that road? Did you maintain that honesty even though you took that hit?
I have, and for the last 25 years, I've maintained that honesty. I still maintained a sales career, and I've done quite well with it, and I live with myself quite well. So
good for you.
I think there's something to be said for that.
Good for you. There certainly is good for you.
CJ, thanks for the story. We've got a lot more. Let me hear a couple more here. Jenny is calling from Matthews, Virginia, down Brad Blanton's hometown way. Hi, Jenny. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Good. I just wanted to say to your guest, I understand the kind of honesty that he's talking about. It's the same kind of honesty that Jesus had when he was yelling at the Pharisees, and the kind of honesty that Teddy Roosevelt had when he was yelling at the party bosses. I understand all that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I also don't agree with is something like Frank Hargrove said to the black people, get over slavery.
Mm.
Okay, now he was just saying exactly what he felt. But that kind of thing is inappropriate. And I guess my fear is that you would be marking this as a formula. And there are no formulas in life. You have to take life as it comes. And also, Teddy Roosevelt would never in a million years have wanted to hurt somebody who was weaker than he was and realizing that he had, you know, the presidency going on. And just the same here is, you know, most of the people on the show that have been talking about this, and I don't mean to put anything in here that's, you know, I don't mean you to take this the wrong way, but most of you are white male. Okay.
That would be 100% of the guests, if not the callers.
Yeah, and you know, it's nice for you to talk about the luxury of being honest, but and I believe in honesty. I have lost jobs because I've been honest,
mm-hmm.
and but it's a little harder for those of us who are not white males to be honest, even though most women who are whistleblowers in companies, they're far more likely to lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, are they better people for it? Yes, but there is a cost. And there's also a cost to families when people who are very powerful and have nasty personalities decide that they're going to use honesty to hit people over the head. And I have two family members who committed suicide, and I think that was pretty indicative of the way their father treated them with brutal honesty. So, you know, there's it has to be very careful about this type of thing.
Jenny, those are great points all, and I'm grateful to you for making them.
I doubt very seriously if those suicides were related to honesty. I doubt that very seriously.
You may, though Jenny's family, and she's got a different perspective. What about the position of privilege that she sees in your outlook, Brad Blanton? What do you make of that?
Well, I think she's right about the position of privilege, but that it's also possible to use it as an excuse. The point is that a human being, whether it's a person of color or white or female or male, as a being, is the same no matter what. And the liberation of the being from its mind depends on the honesty of the person, the willingness to tell the truth.
But power certainly comes in different sized packages.
And there is a formula there that she's adhering to, that people should be appropriate. It would be inappropriate for a person to have a kind of a racist attitude and speak it out loud. But I think until people who have them speak them out loud, no correction occurs. And so I don't like that that belief in appropriateness. I think appropriateness is just a form of moralism, and that moralism is a disease. And that the disease of civilization is moralism, whether it's about being rational and reasonable or careful to select your friends, that whatever the moralism is, it's poisonous because it's living in the mind and not being honest.
So say it loud and say it proud, says Brad Blanton, whatever it may be. What an interesting approach. I don't know if society's going to go down this road anytime soon, but a little more honesty, I could certainly see a lot of use for. I want to thank all of you for being with us.
The pendulum swinging that way, I think. I think we've had enough lying and secrecy and in our face about all the ridiculous lies of the current administration. I think we're headed the other way. I think radical honesty is an idea whose time has come.
Well, just maybe. Brad Blanton, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Harry Frankfurt, philosopher retired at Princeton University, author of On Truth and On BS. Professor Frankfurt, always great speaking with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And A.J. Jacobs at Esquire Magazine, thanks for the piece. You really opened up a fun picture for us. Thanks, A.J.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This was never real. I was true.